Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. It's June 1st, Wednesday, 2011, or Wednesday, June 1st, 2011, or I guess there's proper ways of saying that and probably in ways that you're not supposed to say it. I'm Ben, and with me is...
Kai. Hello.
And we're back again. A couple things we wanted to touch on. One is that we're looking at having some interviews with some very interesting people, not famous people, but probably more interesting than pretty much any famous person I can think of. One of the people that I'm trying to line up an interview with, some people would call him a mercenary. He's actually not a mercenary. He's private security, but he's private security in places, you know, he's not so much trailing behind a pop star pushing cameras out of the way. He's had, you know, trucks blow up underneath him and people shooting at his head and things like that. He is a private security guy and that some might call a mercenary. He's a good, solid libertarian. I don't know exactly where he stands with anarchism. I tend to think he is more of a minarchist, or perhaps like Hans Hermann Hoppe has talked about minimal states as in city-states. I think possibly he might hold a better view of that than the big full-size states that we currently have. But I'll ask him about that. And then we've also got, we're lining up an interview with an active-duty United States Army major. He has seen a lot of action. He has led a armor company. He was an armor company commander and a cavalry platoon leader. So he's hardcore. This is not, and he's a good, solid libertarian. A lot of times we don't think of these kind of people as being libertarian, especially among us, among the anarchists. We have a tendency to think of anybody in the military as being our enemy. But I'm going to try to shine some light in a direction that maybe is lets people look at that situation a little differently. Also, just because I'm poking my finger in the eye of all my potential anarchist listeners out there, a third person that I am attempting to get lined up is a instructor for police. He is a high-level instructor for... actually, I have two different guys. One is a criminal... teaches criminal investigation, and the other guy teaches SWAT teams. Yeah, you heard that right. He teaches SWAT teams. Okay, so I'm attempting to get these two guys lined up, along with the Army major and the private security or mercenary, however you want to view him. And what I'd like from my audience is for you to write emails to badquaker@badquaker.com and put in the subject line questions. Badquaker@badquaker.com, subject line questions, and anything you would like to ask to someone who is a professional private security working in all kinds of places, the Middle East, all around the world. If there is something you'd like to ask a United States Army major who has seen a lot of battle time in the Middle East, former Army armor company commander and cavalry platoon leader, or if there's questions you would like to ask to a guy who teaches SWAT teams or a guy who teaches criminology, put that in your email. And let's be civil. Let's not say, what's it like to kill babies? None of that kind of nonsense. We are civilized human beings, and we're not going to try to humiliate anyone or catch them in any kind of stupid questions. So respectful questions, things that you're really curious about.
But you can do tough questions, too. Sure.
Tough questions are good. Just no baiting and disrespectful questions. Okay, so that's done. We're going to call that, in the spirit of Jack Spearco and his podcast that he does over at thesurvivalpodcast.com, That's what he calls the house cleaning or housekeeping. Housekeeping, that's what he calls it. So in the spirit of Jack Spearco, that was our housekeeping. Now, what else were we going to talk about, Kai?
Well, I suppose we probably ought to get it out of the way because we haven't discussed it enough. Yet again, we will be discussing voting.
Voting. Yeah. I hope this is not boring our listeners. If it is, drop a line, send me an email to ben@badquaker.com and just tell me, hey, stop with the voting. I'm tired of hearing the voting thing.
if we haven't addressed it the way you, if you have any questions or anything like that, just drop us a line too, because, you know, we're kind of flying blind here. We're giving us, you know, we're giving you our opinions, but, you know, if you have contrary opinions or if you have things that you don't think we discussed well enough, you know, let us know.
Yeah, and we'll give you our time on that. I did want to mention, I said before in discussing Tom Woods and his articles in reference to voting and why you should vote for Ron Paul, and we talked about how both Kai and I like Ron Paul, and I really enjoy hearing him speak and hearing, I'm thrilled that somebody is saying the things that he's saying out in the public, and I'm thrilled that he has brought so much attention to our movement. And I admitted to voting for him more than once. I voted for him in 88. So, you know, I went down and registered as a Republican so I could vote for him in 2008 in the primaries. So, you know, when you hear me say that voting helps the state, I'm somewhat hypocritical in this because I end up very often voting. So,
And again, we're not saying that you are that you're not, you know, that you don't have good enough street cred as an anarchist if you vote. You know, we're not saying that we're going to revoke your anarchist card if you vote. We're just kind of throwing out the idea that voting is beneficial to the state and is the opposite of what we strive for as anarchists.
Tom Woods referenced in one of his articles Roderick Long, who I really have a lot of respect for. Roderick Long, he's a real good guy, a brilliant addition to our movement, and has written some really good stuff and has some great speeches and great articles over at Mises.org. And I would not want to argue with Roderick Long. You know, if it was his position that it's daytime and it was my position that it's nighttime and the clock tells me that it's midnight, I would not want to argue against Roderick Long because he is just so brilliant. But having said that, now I'm going to argue with Roderick Long. I went over and looked at the piece that Tom Woods referenced and I read Roderick Long's argument. As to he's arguing against anarchists who say you shouldn't vote. So Roderick Long is arguing on the side that you should actually take an active role in the political process for the purpose of essentially dismantling the state. I looked at his whole argument, and I'm not saying that he did use a straw man argument. What I'm saying is, it's the argument that he attacks is not my argument. He may be attacking someone else's valid argument. If that's the case, he does a very good job in dealing with it. He did actually quote another person, and he did a pretty good job of tearing down their argument. But their argument, to me, is a straw man, so for him to approach that argument, it doesn't address my argument in the least. It's like, you know, why did you chop down this tree? And the answer is, that tree is not chopped down. I chopped down a different tree. So, you know, it's not even talking apples and oranges. Now, the major problem that I saw in Roderick Long's entire argument was, and I hate to put words in his mouth, but it appeared to me from the article, and I'll try to remember to put a link to his article in the notes for today's show. It appeared to me, reading his article, that he believes that the state must be dismantled, and we must be the mechanics who dismantle it. And I would say that's not right. As a matter of fact, I would say that's wrong.
I would agree with that.
My position with the state is that it is philosophically and morally unstable. It is financially unstable. It is economically a structure that cannot support itself. Since it is morally unstable, it is economically unstable, rationally speaking, the philosophy of the state is not sound enough for it to perpetuate itself. So it will grow to a certain point, and when it gets to a certain point, it will self-destruct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my argument is that anything we do to the state to hurry that process along actually strengthens the state. We must allow the state to come to its entire maturity so that everyone can view the hideousness of the state, and then they will universally choose no state. Mm-hmm. And the state will then cease to exist, and it cannot come back because we will have seen what the state is in its true nature. And I look at the state, I don't want to put words in Roderick Long's mouth, but I think Roderick Long is of the camp that views the state as simply the product of the imagination of people. Well, that's true, it is. Like Kai and I were talking a minute ago, it's like a forest is simply the way humans refer to a group of trees. But if there were no humans talking about the trees, there would be no forest, there would just be trees.
Right.
Forest is not a real thing. The trees are real. You can go touch them, you can look at them, you can hang from them, they can grow, they can die. But the forest is a concept.
Right.
And in that sense, the state is a concept. It's like the forest. It's just something that we accept as true because we accept it verbally and make it happen. But I believe beyond that, and this is going to be a little, maybe a little woo-woo, maybe a little existential, or maybe even religious, according to how you think of it, you know. So maybe any atheist listening, you're not maybe going to like this so much. But I think that the state, in addition to being an imaginary entity that functions simply because people function on its behalf, I think in addition to that, it actually has its own essence, its own something about it that is real in a sense that we can't feel, touch. Okay, I'll just say it. I think the state is evil, and I don't mean evil as in describing a characteristic like that dog that bit me is evil, not like that. But I believe the state is evil with a capital E. I believe the state is the opposite manifestation of good. Whatever you perceive as that which is creative and that which is good and that which is positive, if you want to call that God or if you want to name it as some specific entity, if you want to not acknowledge its existence or however you view that which is the creative energy of the universe, and I don't mean to sound spacey and hippie, I say God. God created the universe. He and I say he for the lack of gender knowledge, but I believe God created the heavens and the earth, and I don't believe he was under any particular restrictions in doing so, and I believe that part of the creation he created is his opposite. And that is evil, with a capital E. And you can name that whatever you want. We can call him devil or Lucifer or whatever. But I believe that the state is the physical manifestation on Earth of that evil. Just like the community of believers around the world who actually believe in good and believe that good can come and that people can be good, those people together are the manifestation of God on earth. In biblical terms, we would be talking about what the Bible refers to as the church being God on earth. And I believe the state is the exact opposite. I believe it is the Antichrist. The state is that entity, and it is more than just the collective thoughts of people. It is the collective essence of people, and there's no scientific way that I can point to that and prove it. I can only, it's like looking at a black hole through a telescope. You can't see it because it doesn't emit any light, but you can see its effects on other things, and that's how I view the state. I see it as the entity of pure evil, and deep inside there is something that we can't see or touch, but it affects other things in such a way that we can measure its effect and prove that it exists. Now, so I just laid out a whole bunch of junk there, and I'm not even sure if Kai believes any of what I just said. So you may get a totally opposite opinion coming from her. And I really hadn't planned to even say that stuff, but that's what I believe that the state is. And I believe that the state will continue. And if we go and we attack the state and tear it down and stomp and tear down all of its edifices and just drive it right into the ground and beat it to death and kill it so that there is no more state whatsoever, it will rise back up out of those ashes and it will be more hideous than it ever was before. I believe that because that's what the state has done every single time. We've torn this thing down over and over, and it keeps coming back worse.
Yep. And I think, to a certain degree, even if you don't believe in necessarily the collective unconsciousness...
That sounds very hippie.
Well, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm a philosopher.
You didn't interrupt me. I shouldn't have interrupted you.
Spent too many years as a teenager reading Young. That's Young with a J.
Robert Young. I didn't know he wrote anything. He's an old-time actor.
Yep. Even if you don't believe in the idea of a collective unconscious, you can look at it, you know, a person has within them this ability to be both good and evil. You can see the good when it manifests in, you know, a smiling baby and laughing and happy and all of this. And when you are sort of filled with that, when you purposefully choose that, you find that more and more and more. And there are more and more reasons for you to be happy. And when you dwell in happiness, you create happiness. And when you dwell in anger and bitterness and meanness and jealousy, you create more of that, too. And so what I think the ultimate issue with the state is that the state is that essence of us. It is greed and jealousy and hatred. All of that finds its outlet within the state, because what the state does is it allows you to take from other people what you have not rightfully earned.
It creates a moral excuse for you to live out those things
exactly
that are otherwise that you would be ashamed to allow out.
Exactly. For me personally, I cannot morally justify going over to my neighbor's house and stealing money from them to buy a car or to
build a road
or any of these things. But using the state as sort of a third-party intermediary, you can wash this feeling through so that your hands remain clean. You're moral still. You don't steal. And yet, stealing happens. And you are accepting that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is... You know, this is how I view it. I view it as a decision that individual people make to not take responsibility for these immoral decisions.
Mm.
And so I think the end of us, of the state will happen when we have allowed the state to become so immoral that you can't escape from it. There's no hiding from it. There's no saying, well, I voted for this. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't morally justify the state anymore. Mm-hmm. And if you work towards making the state smaller, if you work on making the state prettier, mm-hmm. what you're doing is you're working on making the state more morally justifiable to you.
More palatable.
Right. You're yep. making it so that it's an easier pill for you to swallow.
Yeah.
Which is not helping at all. It makes it worse.
I'm sorry. Let me just interrupt just for a second, because the way my brain works, if I don't say this, I'll forget it forever and ever, and then there will be no record of it ever being thought of. We referred before to Ayn Rand. Side rant. If you're going to come here from a foreign country that uses a foreign language, let's just say Russia, and you're going to try to name yourself something because you're making up a whole new name for yourself because your name is hard to pronounce, you don't do so by spelling your first name A-Y-N, okay? You call yourself Ann, or call yourself Bill, or Theodore, or whatever,
or be proud of your heritage and keep your name.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's my...
Of course.
My Rand rant. Yeah. Of course, what? You had to hold your tongue.
I did. I had to hold my tongue with that one. When I was a teenager, I had a lot of issues with my given name because it's a very common name and a lot of people had it and nobody could spell it right. Nobody could spell it right. So I had a nickname. That all my friends called me, which was Coyote. Mm-hmm. And so I started going by Kai, mm-hmm. which nobody can spell right.
Let me get back to my Rand rant.
Anyway.
We had mentioned before that Rand had supported voting and had actually supported Barry Goldwater, the Republican candidate in 1964, who was himself... very libertarian and actually anarcho on some things, but not how what I would call consistently libertarian. But anyway, now going back to Roderick Long's argument and bouncing that off of the fact of Rand's support for a Republican candidate like that, and considering that Rand was like the most selfish human being that's ever breathed air, Rand is consistent in the fact that she supported the voting. Mm-hmm. Because here's what I would say about voting. Voting is a way to short-term possibly improve the situation that you yourself are in.
Right.
So let's take, for example, the New Hampshire Liberty folks up there in the Free State Project. Their immediate goal is... liberty in our lifetime. That's their slogan and that's their goal. And that's a noble cause. They want to all move to one state, get control of the government of that state, and wrestle it into freedom, and wrestle it into liberty. Now, this is a noble goal, but it's Randian in the sense that you're only thinking of yourself and the generation that you are a part of right now. Because as much as I support, and I have friends that are in New Hampshire, and I love what they're doing, and I follow all the stuff that they do on the internet, and I'm a real supporter of the Free State Project. But here's what the problem is with the Free State Project. Eventually, the state will notice you. And I'm not talking about the state of New Hampshire or even the state in Washington, D.C. I'm talking about that greater entity that I was talking about earlier. Eventually, the state will notice you. And when it does, it will Ruby Ridge you. It will Waco you.
Or worse.
But on a state, on a New Hampshire-wide level.
Or it will French Revolution you.
Yeah, which...
Because when you go into it going, you know, if I were ruler of the world, everyone would be free. No. Because when you get there,
yeah,
you won't.
Yeah.
When you are put in that position, you won't.
I think that's the fear with Ron Paul, is that somehow he'll change, and those who know Ron Paul know that he will not change. Well, let me just say right now, publicly, if Ron Paul was elected for president, if he won the nomination as a Republican, if he made it to the final election, and if he were elected president, the state would kill him. And that's going to sound like, oh, crazy conspiracy theory. Ooh. No, it would happen. Now, that what I'm saying, the state would kill him, that doesn't necessarily mean an assassination. If you take a look at Jimmy Carter, look at the old films of Jimmy Carter when he was running for the president. He was young, he was healthy, he was energetic. You look at him at the end of 4 years, and the man was a walking death sentence. Mm-hmm. And he looks better today than he did in 1980, because the burden of the presidency was so horrible on that man. Now, you look at the same thing happened with George W. Bush. If you look at a picture or a film of Bush in 2000, Bush looked young and healthy and attractive. And you look at him right now, and he's an old man. Mm-hmm. Look at Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton had a youthful appearance and youthful
Look at Obama.
Look at the age that's been put on Obama in 4 years. The man has aged a lifetime in 4 years. Ron Paul is already an old man. You put him in the presidency, and it's a death sentence for him. Mm-hmm. And assuming he could do great things, it will kill him. Now, alive, he's worth a lot.
Right.
He's a voice, and he's doing things. But I just don't know. I would hate to have it in my heart that I helped kill him.
Yeah. And, you know, ultimately, it comes back to what would it accomplish? It wouldn't accomplish anything.
Not a thing.
So we get 4 years of Ron Paul, where he drastically cuts the budget, where he eliminates the Fed, where he does all of these great things.
Imagine 8 years. He gets rid of the Department of Education, gets rid of the Department of Defense, but he pulls the Department of Defense back down, and we actually defend America rather than invading it. Yeah. If he does everything that he says that he wants to do for 8 years, gets reelected, he's in there for a full 8 years. As soon as he leaves, it's all going to come right back again in the first 4 years of the next person.
Yep.
The media will twist the event. It will all be, Hollywood liberals will be telling about how horrible it is.
And I have, here's the thing. I have great hope that we are rapidly approaching the end of the state. And I say this for very specific reasons. It took Rome, 1,000 years to reach the height of its...
From going from a small city-state to its peak, its pinnacle.
It's taken us, 250?
Yeah.
We are rapidly moving. Mm-hmm. We are achieving more in the space of a year now than we have ever achieved.
Yep.
And because of this, the state is expanding at a pace that it has never expanded at before.
Right.
And it is outpacing itself.
Yeah.
It is expanding quicker than it is capable of having the infrastructure to expand.
Right.
And what that means is, if we let it expand, let it go. Let it. It's not going to be around for very much longer.
Yeah.
We're talking maybe another 100 years.
Yeah, if you look at the way it exposes itself right now and the people revolting across Africa. So to take Egypt, for instance, they saw the evils of the state. The people themselves stood up against it. They literally threw the state out. And then they welcome the state back in with open arms. Mm-hmm. So it's like, out goes the bad boss, in comes the new... Uh-oh, I just totally destroyed that, didn't I? in comes the new boss, same as the old boss.
Something like that.
So, you know, they just replaced one state with another. The one that they've got is actually turning out to be worse than the one that they had.
Yep. And it always is.
Yeah. So as we watch the state become more and more obvious to just the people in Egypt are looking at that going, what just took place? What did we just risk our lives for? What did some people die for? Was it so that we could have this again?
Mm-hmm.
And as this happens on a global scale and people see this thing for what it really is, then it's far more likely to get rid of it by letting it come to its maturity than by trying to, you know, put a tie on it and brush its teeth and pretend that it's not the hideous dragon that it is.
Mm-hmm.
So...
So I guess the ultimate thing is, we don't think you should vote. And I think we've covered it pretty well at this point. I think, you know...
Yeah. Oh, let me bring Hans Hermann Hoppe into this. Because here's another guy that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. And I'll try to not to make my rant as long on him as I did on Rand and on Roderick Long. But Hans Hermann Hoppe is a brilliant man, and I think if you look at the steps of liberty, if you consider Mises as one of the major steps in liberty, and if you consider Rothbard one of those that took the place and made that step, then you have to accept Hoppe as the current step. Hans Hermann Hoppe is just brilliant. But Hans, if I understand him correctly, he, and I mentioned this earlier in referencing one of our guests that I hope to have an interview with. Hoppe sees the state dissolving into a series of small, usable city-states. He refers to Luxembourg and Monaco and places like that. My problem with that is I think there's a certain amount of naiveness in the sense that the state is just going to let itself pull back like that.
Right.
Going back to my theory of the core of what the state is, if you take a beast, a creature of any kind, and you fully allow it to understand that it's getting ready to die, there you have two different responses in nature. One is, if you, let's say, if you corner a rabbit, and you injure that rabbit horribly, but you don't kill it, but it sees that you're about to kill it, oftentimes a little, a weak animal, generally a herbivore, like a rabbit,
prey animal.
A deer, a goat, things like this, will basically collapse and wait to die. But if you corner...
Basically, knowing that it's going to die, and so it passes out so that it doesn't feel that it's going
to
die.
Yeah, it goes into a passive mode to allow that kill to take place. But if you corner a bear like that, and you wound a bear, or you wound a badger, or you wound a coyote, or if you wound a lion, you had better be prepared to very quickly finish it off. Because that thing is going to turn on you, and it's going to put every ounce of its life, every ounce of its being, into fighting you with everything it's got. And I believe that's what we're facing with the state. When it sees, and it really understands, and I'm going to say this, I don't think the state's very bright.
Mm-hmm.
But when it, within whatever it's, conscious is, whether that's the just the collection of people who trust and rely on the state, or my theory that the state is actually a being, whatever that thing is, when it dawns on it that it's about to die, it's going to get really, really nasty, and it's going to start thrashing and killing and biting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to take it back to a crazy religious point of view, that's exactly what the Bible says that this beast will do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, you know, you can translate the Bible in a billion different ways, by 20 different people could translate the Bible in a billion different ways, but that's what I see there. I see a description from I picked the Bible up and I looked at the whole thing, and from beginning to end, I see the story of the state.
Right.
From the falling away and the attempt of man to put himself into a godlike position by making his own laws and enforcing those laws on other men, to make himself godlike in that sense, and then to create this godlike thing of the state every chance that he gets together, and he uses these hideous techniques to form a new state every single time that he can. And then finally, in the end, he gets to the point of where he has to kill a third of his own followers to come into his fullness, and then he eventually thrashes around and dies and is thrown into chains. To me, the story of the Bible as an overview is the story of the state. And from beginning to its end, there's never a moment in there when the state is not the problem.
Yep.
The little wink of time, 500 years that Israel lived without a state, and then the leaders, thinking each of them could become the new king, wanted a state. This was in the book of Judges. And so they demand a state, and Samuel the prophet, the judge, is praying about it, and he says, God, they've rejected me. What's going on? And God said, no, they didn't reject you. They rejected me. And that is that's the key right there to me, that a stateless society is what God had planned. But man wants to be that God, so man creates the state. Man creates its own God. And the state attempts in every way to fill all of the mythical things that we attribute to God. It can make food appear out of nowhere. It can make the weather. It can control the weather. Every mythical thing that we attribute to gods throughout the ages is what we attribute to the state. Anyway, that wasn't supposed to be that long of a rant. I think we probably broke our time frame. Do you have any idea how long we've been rolling like this?
I have no idea.
Well, this was really way too much of me just talking and ranting. But look, folks, we're kind of winging it here. This is our 7th podcast. And I forgot to say that in the intro. This is our 7th podcast, so we're really just making this up as we go along. Give us some feedback. If you don't want to hear any more crazy rants like that, just say, hey, you know, why don't you talk about farming or education or, you know, practical things like how we can set ourselves free from the state by gardening or, you know, I mean, have any kind of questions or any kind of feedback, send that to us and we'll adjust. Because we don't have to just have a crazy bearded, long-haired guy ranting and raving.
And if you are an atheist or if you are not a Quaker, don't be afraid to come back and listen. Because we're not always crazy religious rants.
Well, mine usually are.
Well, true. But there's a lot of good stuff here besides that.
Well, thanks for listening. And we're going to wrap up another episode of BadQuaker.com podcast. And I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
Thanks a lot for listening.